From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of February 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley at ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, we'll take up the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be here with all the agricultural news for the day, and then we'll hear from Daryl Good about bases. He's pretty intent that the reason the cash prices have been so strong is because the feed usage figures are simply, well, too low. We'll hear from him. And then, as we close out our program, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, and it all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for Stock and Commodity Reports on Illinois Public Media comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract in the wheat futures finished the July, or rather the March, at $6.60 and 3/4, down a penny and a half. The July, the harvest month, at $6.79, down 5 3/4 for the day. March corn at $6.42 and a half, settlement price up a quarter. The May at $6.48, down a half for the day. July corn, $6.52 and a quarter, a quarter of a cent lower. And September futures at $5.96 and 3/4, down a penny and 3/4. December contract, $5.73 and a half, 1 3/4 lower. The March at $5.85, down a penny and 3/4 for the day. Soy complex, March beans at $12.31 and a half, a half lower. The May at $12.40, down one. July $12.49 and 3/4, down one. And August soybeans a penny lower at $12.48. November futures at $12.40, down a penny and a quarter. A bean meal futures $3.21.70, down $3.70 on the day. Bean oil at $52.58, 41 cents higher. Live cattle futures from the CME. April contract $128.80, up 22 1/2. June at $127.35, down 60. March feeders at $155.27 1/2, up 27 1/2 cents for the day. The April futures for 100 pounds, $157.55, up 45 cents. And lean hogs on the afternoon. April contract at $88.95, down 15 cents for the day. You are listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support for Stock and Commodity Reports on Illinois Public Media comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com. Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the outside markets as they settled up in Chicago for the day. Crude oil futures at $98.92, up 51 cents. Ethanol at $2.24 and 4/10, a penny and 3/10 higher. Natural gas at $2.43 and 9/10, that's 3 3/10 of a cent lower. And the heating oil or diesel fuel, 3/10 of a cent higher, $3.19 and 4/10 of a cent. Gold futures for the day, $1,729.30, down $17.10. And the dollar at 78.6, that's up 0.07 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service in Urbana-Champaign for today. Mostly cloudy skies, a high of 34 degrees, a north-northwest wind at about 9 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy during the early evening, then gradual clearing, a low of 19 degrees with a west-northwest wind between 5 and 8 miles an hour. On Thursday, sunny skies, a high of 37, a west-southwest wind at 5 to 11 and gusting to 15 miles an hour. On Thursday, partly cloudy, a low of 27, a southwest wind at 7 to 11, gusting as high as 15. Friday, we'll see partly sunny skies, a high near 35 degrees, a west-southwest wind again at 9 to 16. This time it'll gust a bit higher at 23. And then Friday night, mostly cloudy and a low of 16. More on the weather when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
On the phone line now for the closing market report to take a look at what's been happening in the world of futures is Paul Cooley. He's at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul. Well, Paul, let's talk first about what's been happening in this marketplace. What did you see today as we head into tomorrow morning's USDA numbers? Well, Paul doesn't seem to be there at the moment. We'll try to come back and get him on the line in just a moment and find out just exactly where he went. Hang on, let me see. I think he's there. Hey, Paul,
Todd?
How are you? Yep. I just didn't have a button pushed.
Well, number one, farmers and traders are very well aware that we are going to have a report tomorrow morning, and the general feeling is that the stocks will be just ending stocks will be just a little smaller, and of course the whole world will be watching South American guest estimates, both Brazil corn, soybeans, to just see what the government has up their sleeve for those production areas. The last 5 to 10 days, there has been some rain both in Argentina and Rio Grande do Sul, and overnight we also experienced some additional rains. It's pretty close to 100% of normal rainfall in those key growing states, and of course that's good news as we correlate the calendar date to August the 8th. The general feeling is that it'll be interesting to see how the government adjusts U.S. corn stocks as well as adjusts the South American production.
So which number do you think will be of most interest in to you, and that you think will be most likely to be adjusted, if any of them?
Well, I guess I'd be surprised if the government does lower bean carryover from their last report at 275 for the simple reason that exports seem to be extra slow. And the other one that I think that'll be very interesting to watch is the soybean production in South America, because I would judge the rains probably just in the nick of time, but it'll be interesting to see how the government reacts to it. We do know that the profitability of processing corn into ethanol is extremely, the margins are very extremely narrow, and we know the oilseed processing margins are extremely narrow in the oil industry. And as a result of that, there's not a lot of magic that we see other than the funds seem to like to buy the rallies. And today we did see them sell the dips. Funds sold 2,000 corn, 2,000 wheat, and 3,000 beans.
So there are many producers that are still sitting on corn in a bin, whether that be their own bin or an elevator someplace, that they have decided they are simply going to wait it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, the farmer does hold the key to a great deal extent on the corn market. And the one thing that bothers me a great deal, of course, is that, and we've talked about it 100 times, is the concept of a big corn planted acreage this spring. The concept that the government is basically backing away of supporting agriculture, both with the blending fees and ethanol and direct payments. And what bothers us is that if we do see some good weather, good yields, we could see some extremely cheap prices. Crop insurance is a product, but it is a product, and it doesn't always correct the cold, so to speak.
So it is a product from last year at the moment,
yeah.
not for this year. It will be a product for this year. When you put everything in your mind, including and excluding what might or might not change tomorrow, based on today's fundamentals, are you more likely to think that this market will move lower or move higher based off no changes in tomorrow's reports?
Yeah. Well, I lean a little bit sideways to lower
right.
in time. And I still think that's the market attitude, and time will tell us. So that I think one thing this morning, early in this morning, this Fink with BlackRock said, he didn't want to have any bonds in his portfolio, no gold, and lots of stocks. And of course, supposedly a little hiccup with the Greek financing caused the commodities to break. We saw a higher price level in beans, we saw a lower price level, and it came back. And historically, whenever we see something like that happen, we actually see an acceleration on the upside, and a lot of times closing beans 5 to 10, 15 higher. And boy, that action just showed that we closed a half cent lower in just basically thick, dull trade. And for any tech nation out there, I would sure look at my maps one more time.
Okay, thanks so much, Paul.
Have a profitable day.
Hey, you too.
And tell Zwicker that, too.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when you said that.
Have a good one.
Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what Paul has to say again, you can do that. In fact, if you want to hear the comments that he was referring to that Dan Zwicker had to say, you can either tune in tomorrow afternoon for the Closing Market Report. He should be here. Dan may be traveling tomorrow. I don't quite recall off the top of my head, but certainly he was on Commodity Week over the weekend, and Paul was there as well. And I know Dan laid out a technical picture that seemed pretty, well, you'll just have to go back and listen to it. And you can hear it off our website at WILLAG.org. Hey, Dave Dickey is here. He'll take us through the ag news for the afternoon in just a moment.
In agricultural news, the United States in the next week will publish a final rule ending its controversial method of calculating whether products are being dumped in the U.S. market. The World Trade Organization has repeatedly found that the practice known as zeroing does not conform with U.S. international trade obligations. Those findings cleared the way for a number of nations to impose retaliatory tariffs on imports of U.S. goods. Countries that have initiated successful WTO dispute complaints against the U.S. use of zeroing include Argentina, Brazil, Canada, Ecuador, Japan, Mexico, South Korea, Thailand, and Vietnam. The leader of South Korea's main opposition party, which polls say is headed for a big victory in an April election, said that it would repeal a free trade deal with the U.S. if it wins control of parliament. Public response to the deal has been generally positive, but a small and politically powerful farm lobby, as well as left-leaning parts of the party, argue that South Korea compromised the national interest in favor of big corporations when signing the deal with the United States. China and Canada today signed a series of agreements to boost modest levels of bilateral trade, including a deal that Ottawa says should allow the immediate resumption of Canadian beef and tallow exports after a 9-year pause. Beijing halted beef and tallow imports from Canada after Canada discovered a case of mad cow disease in 2003. Canada and China will need to conduct a legal review of the deal and then sign and ratify it before it can take effect. Canada says it is determined to open up new markets and reduce reliance on the U.S., which takes about 75% of all Canadian exports. Statistics Canada today says that the Canadian population grew by 5.9% over 5 years to 33.5 million people in 2011, the fastest growth rate in the group of eight leading industrialized nations. immigration accounted for two-thirds of the population growth rate over the past decade. And House Republicans have introduced their version of a bill to ban insider trading by thousands of federal officials. Republicans, though, wiped out a key provision in the Senate version of the bill that would have required political intelligence firms to register and file disclosure reports. These are companies that try to pick up information from lawmakers, then pass it on to investment firms and their clients. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can find on our website, along with our daily agricultural programming, including the pre-opening and opening market reports and the midday update as well, at WILLAG.org. Have you signed up for our free weekend newsletter yet? If not, and you have email, come and do that right now, because it's a good one. Dave writes that about Friday afternoon and sends it out over the weekend. It's a great marketing letter, and it's free. Just sign up at WILLAG.org over on the right-hand side of the page. Now, up next, you know, the cash price of corn. Well, that one's just kind of unbelievable for farmers and almost everyone else. They simply cannot understand why it's above the price in Chicago, or at least why it's been above the price in Chicago for such a very long time. Having the cash price of corn above the futures price trade in Chicago is, well, just a bit odd. Still, it sometimes happens, but almost never in the middle of the marketing year. That's when, even if the corn crop was a small one, there should be plenty of it around to satisfy the needs of end users, thinks University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good.
No question about it. I mean, we're in the middle of a marketing year, and regardless of how small or large the crop is or how large inventories are, in mid-year, there's not an overall shortage of corn. We don't really think about shortages developing until you get towards the end of the marketing year prior to the previous harvest. That's when you can get kind of a squeeze if there are small stocks. But there's plenty of inventory at mid-year. It's a matter of how rapidly that's moving to market relative to how much corn the market needs on a daily basis.
Well, those daily needs drive the cash price, and the difference between it and the price of corn in Chicago at the CME Group, or the futures price, well, that one's called the basis. Again, basis is the difference between the local cash price and the futures price. Well, that difference indicates how badly the cash market wants or needs a commodity like corn, says Daryl Good.
And so we kind of think of the basis as a gatekeeper, if you will, saying, do we need to signal a larger flow of corn to the market, or do we need to slow that down? And the basis kind of plays that role. And so when you have a really strong basis for an extended period of time, would just suggest that the market has been trying to coax corn into the marketplace all year long, that the flow has been slow relative to what the market needs.
Well, Good says there have been periods when corn basis has been strong and paying more for cash corn than it's worth on the board in Chicago. Those have been historically short-lived. This year's strong corn basis, however, has been in place for nearly 5 months.
In most markets for this time of year, we've been record strong on basis. So I don't find any other period that would be similar to what we've experienced so far this marketing year.
It is a unique situation. Daryl Good says it's best to consider the strong basis in context of its market function.
I think what the relationship says this year is that the futures price has been, if you will, low relative to the cash price for an extended period of time. The futures market seems to be trading a different set of supply-demand numbers than what the cash market is trading. If we're looking at prospects of consuming a bit over 12 billion bushels of corn and having year-ending stocks close to 900 million bushels, the futures price has been kind of trading those numbers and regulating consumption based on those prospects. What the cash market is saying is we're not moving corn fast enough to the market. And so what we're really asking is, are farmers or other owners of corn more stubborn than normal with this year's crop? Or conversely, is the rate of consumption higher than what the market thinks looking at the current balance sheet?
If that is the case, then the difference must be in the feed category, says Darrell Good. This is because the other usage categories are fairly transparent. The market gets good data on how much corn is processed and exported, but not so much on how much is being fed. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production, of course, of Illinois Public Media. It comes to you from the U of I campus in Urbana-Champaign. Possible by...
Programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
On this Wednesday afternoon, Scott Butcher is with us from the Andersons Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana, to take up the cash grain market. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Good. How are you, Todd?
I'm having another one of those days. Wrong buttons, wrong time, all that kind of stuff. But it's all good, all good.
That's right. Day's almost over.
You know what? Day's almost over, and I think that the cash basis remains really strong. Is that the case?
It has, yeah. I mean, we've seen really good cash levels a lot of different areas right now.
Okay, and why do you suppose that might be?
Well, I think we've got to keep, basically keep the corn moving. Really everybody's kind of did a little bit of selling. We saw the market, move down quite a bit after the last report. So it kind of took basis getting stronger to get things moving again. Now the futures have also rallied quite a bit, too, from where we were after the report. So it's also done some of the work. But really, we've seen basis stay strong just to keep interest in corn moving.
And while we keep the corn moving, it's filling the pipeline at this point. Are futures... I suppose because the cash is over, this must be the case. Do you suppose futures are simply just underpriced to the cash price?
Yeah, I don't necessarily know whether that's the case or not, or whether it's just we have so many places for it to go. Especially in our area over here in central Indiana, there's just so many different markets for the corn in this area. You've got a lot of different processor activity. Obviously, you get over to the eastern side of the state, it's even more concentrated with ethanol plants and feeders as well. So, I mean, there's just a lot of holes for corn to trickle to these days.
All right. And what are your bids for the day?
Right now, cash corn, we are $6.63, beans $12.19.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
We appreciate the folks at the Andersons Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. That's Scott Butcher. He's joining us here on the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll say goodbye to some of our radio stations. Now, for the rest of you, stick around. I'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Support comes from Murray Wise Associates, a nationwide agricultural advisory firm and land auction company specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of farmland and agribusiness investments. Land, auctions, agribusiness. More information is at murraywiseassociates.com.
This is Illinois Public Media.
It's National Molasses Bar Day. Up until the 1880s, molasses was the most popular sweetener in the U.S. because it was much cheaper than refined sugar. But by 1919, U.S. per capita consumption of white sugar was twice what it was in 1880, with most Americans completely switching from molasses to granulated white and brown sugar. By the way, in January of 1919, a huge vat of molasses at the Purity Distilling Company in Boston exploded. What came to be known as the Great Molasses Flood killed 21 people and spilled 2 million gallons of molasses into the streets. On this day in agricultural history in 1802, Simpson Grafton of Massachusetts patented what he called an 8-day improved timepiece, better known as the banjo clock, a small inexpensive clock which could be purchased by those without means in the New World. In 1878, Ellis Fryestad, a Swedish botanist, he developed the first system used to classify fungi. In 1886, Wilhelm Koppers was born. This cultural anthropologist developed theories on the origins of society based on studies of hunter-gatherer tribes. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated from Kansas City on the phone line. When I woke up this morning, a lot slicker today than it was yesterday, and it keeps getting colder. Will that continue to be the case, Drew?
Well, I do think that it will, and the reason behind that is that, believe it or not, we've been in the negative phase of Arctic oscillation since the second week in January. You wouldn't know it, though, with the way the temperatures have been across the states, and the main reason for that is because we relocated the Arctic over Russia during this period of 2 weeks. All the Arctic air had temporarily transitioned into parts of Eastern Europe and a big part of Western Russia and parts of Ukraine. Those areas just been absolutely incredibly cold for this time of the year, for any time of the year for that matter. And it pretty much left the Arctic, the true Arctic, in a position where it wasn't all that cold. Well, now things are slowly starting to get back to normal. So a little bit of the cold air is working its way back into the Arctic where it's supposed to be. And we still have this negative phase of Arctic oscillation playing out. Well, what negative phase of Arctic oscillation does is it opens up a northerly flow pattern from the Arctic through Canada and into the heart of the north central and eventually the Midwest, north central plains in the Midwest. And so in this type of pattern, it does usually bring colder air southward. And I think that's where we're headed. I think we're going to see a cooler finish to winter into early spring. And we'll see more of this as we move forward through the next few weeks.
I think the good news there was that it's a cooler finish to the winter, but we're headed towards early spring, so it can't be that cold, I would suppose.
Exactly. We'll try to tell that to the Russians, I suppose, where the temperatures have been in the negative 30s periodically over the past week to 10 days. But you're absolutely right. The sun is going to get higher into the sky, and we are going to see longer day lengths. And so it's going to be more and more difficult to see a prolonged period of bitter cold conditions across the state. So, indeed, we have a lot to be optimistic about, unless you're, of course, in the upper Midwest or northern plains where dryness is still a very big issue. And right now, in this kind of flow pattern, there's not going to be much improvement in the moisture situation up there for quite a little while.
And then take me a little deeper into the United States southern, that is. Talk more about the winter wheat growing regions in the southwest and how they've fared and snow cover across that whole part of the plains.
Well, you know, the hard red wheat country had a fair-sized storm system almost a week ago, last Thursday and Friday into Saturday morning. And it produced a significant amount of moisture across a big part of the region, excluding the southwest corner of the plains, West Texas into southwest Kansas, southeastern Colorado. But there was enough precipitation in the rest of the region that we are really in fairly good shape for this time of the year as far as moisture relative to what we often have. It was dry, of course, this fall, and so these crops are still not in the best of shape. But coming into spring, everything looks pretty rosy at the moment, and there are a number of small disturbances that will be moving through the region as we go forward through this next 10 days to 2 weeks, and that should bring some additional moisture to the region and help reinforce the favorable outlook for early spring weather.
I left you about 30 seconds for the southern hemisphere.
Well, Argentina got bombarded with some significant thunderstorms again last night. Argentina's corn and soybean has more or less been healed up now with moisture deficits that were prevailing earlier in the season, and we should see some really good development conditions going on into the next full week to 10 days. Southern Brazil still has some dryness, and that is probably going to prevail for another couple of weeks.
Thanks so much, Drew.
Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.